there.
So this is based on work done with Zvi, John Joseph, and the meaning of the tilde will become clear towards the end. Wei-Ming Chen and Henrik Johansson, and as well, and there's also some work in progress. And well, here's a little bit of a plan. So I will review briefly the double copy with color kinematics duality. And then I will discuss for a little while why do we actually want color kinematics in this context, apart from the fact that you can actually do calculations in a very easy and straightforward way. And also, once we ask that question, we can also ask the question, what happens if we relax color kinematics duality? What goes wrong, and how can it be fixed? And then with that, with the result of item two in hand, we'll proceed to construct contact terms from BCJ without BCJ. And then I'll show you an example. The example is the standard lab rat that we've collected over the years, namely 3-loop n equals h super gravity. What's written there is 3-loop Yang Mills, but the point of the talk would be that what's there is enough to actually construct the corresponding supergravity amplitude, and you actually don't need to use KLT, at least not all that much. And if there is time, I'll end with some comments and speculations and a pipe dream. But, all right. So, it has long been known that gravity is related to gauge theory. And we know that that happens in at least two ways. One way we've heard in the morning via ADS-CFT, and that's not what I mean. What I mean here is a perturbative relation which was originally discovered by KLT, Kawai, Llewellyn, and Tai in string theory, and then extended in tree-level string theory, and then extended by Bern, Carrasco, and Johansson to loop level in and to other theories in more recently. So so again, this is gravity. So there are two gauge theories involved. In fact, this holds for more theories than gravity. It is, in fact, for gravity theories, it holds for so many of them that one might wonder if it, in fact, holds for all of them. And that's an interesting question whose answer is not known, and that's the subject of another talk. But it also holds for other theories, like the Dirac-Bornfeld action, the Dirac-Bornfeld theory. It actually holds for Yang-Mills theory itself in some strange way. It holds for open string theory. And so on. So in fact, this relation, which goes by the name of the double copy, is today the weapon of choice for attacking perturbative calculations in gravity theories and also in these theories, should anybody want to actually worry about loop calculations in, for example, Dirac-Bornfeld action.
But so, when you're talking Yang-Mills example.
Well, here we can debate exactly to what extent it's useful since you relate Yang-Mills to Yang-Mills. It doesn't actually make things any easier, but formally it lets you change a gauge group to another gauge group. All right, so what is its statement, and what does it rely on? So it relies on the notion of color kinematics duality, which I've summarized here. So Feynman rules tell us that an L-loop amplitude in a gauge theory can be put in this form, always. So it's a sum over all cubic graphs with L-loops, and then there are some symmetry factors, there are some the standard integration. There are some color factors obtained by sticking an FABC in each vertex of the corresponding graph here. And then some numerator factors, which depend on momenta and polarization vectors. These guys basically come from all the momentum dependence in the Feynman graphs, in the Feynman in the vertices of the Feynman rules. And then there are some denominators which are just the propagators of the corresponding graph. So this is always true. Now, what color kinematics says is that whenever you have three of these C's that sum up to zero because of properties of the color of the color of the gauge group, then so here is the relevant property for if all the if all the fields in the theory are in the adjoint representation, then the corresponding ends sum up to zero. So how does technically this involves a little bit of a gymnastics, because you need to actually, every time you make this statement, you need to reparameterize the graphs by changing momenta such that all the parts that are shaded look the same in the three relevant graphs. But up to that step, this is the statement. So whenever that is true, the claim is that the corresponding gravity amplitude looks like that, or rather the corresponding amplitude in the double copy theory looks like that, where these n's are the same, everything else is the same, and tilde is another set of n's, perhaps in the same theory, perhaps in another theory. Oops, I must have said something wrong. Yeah, so that's the statement. So the question that we will try to address is, what happens and how can we write something quasi-similar to this whenever this no longer holds? Right, so what happens then? What does this do? All right. So why is this an interesting question and an important question? Well, at tree level, we know expressions for tree amplitudes which obey color kinematics duality. So we could, in principle, construct this. They're not always nice, but all the same. We could, in principle, write the corresponding theory, the corresponding gravity amplitudes. But at loop level, well, things don't always go as planned, let's put it that way. Right? So we, of course, know of an example of examples where color kinematics holds at loop level. But the idea is that, now, how to construct? We construct it by starting with an ansatz. And this is where the devil lies. And then you impose these guys. And then you impose the cuts. Turns out that you have to impose very few cuts. And if everything goes as planned, then you declare victory, and perhaps you collect a bottle of wine from some bed. And if things don't work, the only thing you've learned is that you've made a stupid assumption somewhere. So you have to go back here and peel off some more of the devil's teeth and bite the bullet and make a bigger ansatz and so on. If you're lucky, it eventually ends. If you're unlucky, well, you have to figure out smarter ways to actually get around that problem. So this is basically a summary of quite a number of years of attempts to construct a color kinematic satisfying representation of the five loop Yang-Mills, which we haven't quite succeeded yet. So again, back to the question, why is it important to ask the question here? Well, we don't have, whenever, we don't always have a color kinematic satisfying representation for gauge theory amplitudes. So we should find ways to make do without them, if possible. So this said, let's begin by asking the question, why do we really want color kinematics duality in the context of a double copy? And the short answer to that question is gauge invariance. Okay. So the idea of gauge invariance in the context of the double copy was discussed and, in several contexts. The way I'm going to present here is due to a paper that Marco Chiodaroli, Murat Günaydın, Johansson, and I did some not too long ago. So the idea is to look back at a gauge theory amplitude and ask the question, when is a gauge theory amplitude gauge invariant? And that statement says that zero is A. And then you have to pick some polarization vector, call it A epsilon 1, and replace it with momentum K1. So that's the statement of gauge invariance. And this is also the same as the same sum of the same integral, and then the same L, the other L, as J. And J, and this is where epsilon goes to K goes in, C, J, divided by the same propagators. And this is zero because of one expressions of N. And two, properties of C. Okay? In particular, the Jacobi identities. If one somehow relaxed the Jacobi identities, then one would find that this becomes sum over J, some integrals again, the same denominators. Some functions which depend on the graph and on the propagator of the graph that is chosen, called lambda, and then C A J lambda plus C B J lambda plus C C J lambda, where these three guys are the guys that would nominally enter in this Jacobi identity. If you construct that identity by picking graph A and, well, picking the graph J and the propagator lambda in it. Okay. So if this is zero, then of course this is zero. If this isn't zero, then, well, that's the structure of the transformed amplitude. All right, so now what happens if we go to M? And we do a diffeomorphism transformation on it. Well, a diffeomorphism, linearized diffeomorphism, is just a graviton polarization vector goes into the symmetric traceless, what I call the momentum K. K mu, symmetric traceless, and some fixed vector nu. So up to the integral sign and the factors, the numerator, this numerator becomes n when epsilon becomes k, n tilde j when epsilon becomes epsilon hat, plus nj when epsilon becomes epsilon hat, n tilde when epsilon becomes k, and the same denominator. So what do we see here? We see that this factor is the same as this factor, or if you switch left and right, it's the same as this factor. And this factor is the same as that, at least as far as algebraic properties are concerned, and the same as this one, again, as far as algebraic properties are concerned. So this zero translates immediately into a zero here. So the short version, we want color kinematics for that, for the double copy to work, and we want that because if we didn't have it, gauge invariance would be screwed up. All right. So what if we are bold and we say,
so you showed the general coordinate invariance is okay if you have a double copy part.
That's right. I don't know how to show the other way around. Yes, so that's why this question mark here is not trivial.
But in the sense, For example, in first case, in this way, they, you can consider the case where you are substituting 2 epsilon by their momentum, right? And it's another kind of Gaussian variance, it could be related to this one, because here you have effectively, if you like, okay, it's still one momentum, right? But you can discuss similar
That's
stuff.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. You can. So this one would be stronger than replacing, say, 2 epsilons.
Yeah, yeah.
So if this one holds, the other one holds too. The other implication doesn't always hold. Okay, so what if we are bold and we say, oh well, to hell with color kinematics, let's pick some random stuff, like the stuff that's written there, and make this construct. What do we get as far as its gauge transformation is concerned? Well, we can quickly translate this one into that. What does it become? Well, it becomes, it doesn't stay zero anymore, but it becomes some same sum, same integral. Let me call this combination J of C. Actually, JC of graph A and propagator lambda. And this is not the same J that appeared in the morning. Shortage of letter in the Latin alphabet, really. All right, so what do we get here? We get the same sum, the same integral, the same coefficients. We get some functions which are look very much like that, Fj lambda. But then we get a J that doesn't involve C's, it involves these M's. So let's call it J kinematics, which involves the same graph A and lambda. Let's put a tilde on it because it involves N tilde. And then we get a plus, and then there's another F, which maybe looks like that, maybe not. It just is constructed out of these N's this time. And then there is JK of the same A and the same propagator lambda, and then the denominator is the same. All right, so that's what the gauge transform of this, one might call naive double copy, looks like. It's a sum of functions with the right propagators to correspond to a graph, and then its numerators are linear combinations of these j's and j tildes, which look like that, with some functions, f. It's the same, it's nominally, they're the same functions as in Yang-Mills theory, really. Okay. So what can we learn, or at least maybe not necessarily learn, but at least guess or suspect by staring at this and assuming that we want M, the correct M, to have the right power counting, the right locality, by power counting I actually mean just the right dimensions, to be local in the sense that it doesn't have more poles than suggested by Feynman graphs and so on. Well,
Radu, is this decomposition unambiguous?
No. It's certainly not unambiguous.
Okay.
And I'll get to what ambiguities can appear in there, and there are billions of them, really.
Yeah. Okay.
But the point really is the appearance of these J's. And, there are several points. The appearance of these J's, the J's that are constructed out of N's, and that these functions are not totally random. They are really the same as in Yang-Mills theory. And they have
functions unambiguous up there. That's what I meant.
Up here, they, no, they can't be unambiguous because these objects are at least
over complete.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And this is, I'm going to get to the consequences of that.
Okay.
Maybe. I should. All right, so what we should be learning out of this is that this M, well, the correct M, should be, if we start with some M which is naive in the sense that, again, it's constructed out of this without color kinematics, it has an extra piece which is morally, well, some integrals, some sums and stuff, But they should be J times J tilde in some sense. And then these K's. And the denominators are still standard propagators. And the cross here, of course, does not exactly follow from what I said. But the point is that the structure that we should expect should be something like that. Okay. Any questions? All right. So how do we put this to some use? So, to put this to some use, it's useful to recall a little bit how do we construct gravity amplitudes without collecting a matrix duality. So we have to step back some 10 years or so. And there are two ways. One is method of maximal cuts with an ansatz, which largely follows the strategy of the construction of a color kinematics dual representation of Yang Mills amplitude with an ansatz. And it has roughly the same problem. If it doesn't work, it doesn't tell you why it doesn't work. And the second is the method of maximal cuts with contact terms and without an ansatz. So the idea for, I'm going to skip the first one because we're not going to use it. So the idea here is that you follow a bunch of steps. Step number one, which at some level might be called a guess, but we're going to make a very reasonable guess, is you, by hook or by crook, you come up with an expression or an approximation of this ML with correct maximal cuts. That is, if you cut all propagators, you find the correct maximum, the correct expression, that is the product of the corresponding three amplitudes. Step two, you proceed to the next maximal cuts. And you compare the next maximal cuts of this expression with the actual next maximal cut. You take the difference. By definition, that difference is local. And that expression, you add it to this. Once you're done with all the next to maximal cuts, you've got an expression, let's call it zero. You've got an expression that obeys maximal cuts and next to maximal cuts. So you proceed to the next to maximal cuts, and you repeat, and so on. Of course, any good algorithm needs to close. So the question is, where do you stop? Of course, you can go on forever. Well, not exactly forever, until you cut all the possible edges in an L-loop graph. There are many of them. But it turns out that you can stop a lot earlier. So when to stop? So this is a little bit of a counting. So I'm going to do the counting for gravity. And I'm going to do the counting for n equals 8 gravity, though I'm going to tell you exactly what changes if you want to relax that. So at L loops, a cubic graph has 2L plus 2 vertices. each vertex has two momenta. So nominally, a numerator of an L-loop graph has 2L plus 2 factors of, call it Sij, so just dot product of two momenta, momentum invariants. All right, so if we are unlucky, we need to cut that many propagators to actually catch all of them. But then we are a little bit lucky because Lorentzian invariants, at least four points. Lorentzian invariance tells us that whatever this guy contributes in the effective action has to start with an r to the 4, if there is at least n equals 1 supersymmetry. So this says that, in fact, it's not the three-level amplitude that has to come out. It has to come out together with a bunch of additional factors. So here we are losing three factors of momentum invariance out of this. But in fact, we're losing a little bit more if we, in fact, we're losing four. Or at least we can lose four Sijs. And I'm going to tell you exactly why we can lose four Sijs. Though not this instant. Now, this is where n equals 8 comes in and says that really, one and two loop power counting says that this thing should really be.
Redwood, can you get a little bigger? Come on, let's start all over.
One and two loop power counting says that once this thing is stripped off, we should really have an extra factor of S square. So all in all, we're losing 4 plus 2, 6. So we should, in fact, do as many cuts as to catch that many momentum invariants. So that would be here. We go on until we do n 2L minus 4 maximal cuts. So as examples, at for n equals to 3, we need to look only n at next to maximal cuts, tel equal 3. Tel equal 4, we have n to the 4. And at 5 loops, we have n to the 6. So that's when we stop. So now, why do we lose 4 rather than 3, as it's suggested here? Well, it has to do, at least, I actually don't know how to argue directly from a gravity point of view for this, but I do know how to argue if we make a nice choice of this M naive. So we are going to choose the other M. We're going to choose M naive to be exactly what used to be here before I erased. That is, we take whatever expression for a Yang-Mills amplitude that we have, and we're going to double copy it blindly. So take that and double copy it blindly. And and any. Until any. So if we are talking about n equals 8 supergravity, then n is proportional to STA3. So each of them has two factors of S or T. So two of them make 4. And so this is, I should actually say that here there is also an n equals 8. So what happens here if we drop sum of the n equals 8, some amount of supersymmetry, then these factors of S will start disappearing, so we need to look at deeper and deeper cuts. So this is our step number one. So why is this a good step number one? It's because, it does what step number one is supposed to do. Because cubic three-point amplitudes double copy without any problems, they always double copy, then the maximal cuts of this are the correct maximal cuts. But at the same time, this expression does a little bit more. It also has the correct next to maximal cuts. Now, I should say, I keep on saying gravity, but really you can replace gravity with anything on the list that I tried to sketch in the beginning, and everything goes through. So the reason this still has the correct next to maximal cuts is because four-point amplitudes always obey color kinematics, if color kinematics is to actually hold in the theory.
You need three amplitudes.
Of course, three amplitudes. Three amplitudes. That's very important. Otherwise, we would be home free. We would have been home free 5 years ago. Right. So this choice kills step number one and also kills step number two. So then we have to worry only about other things. All right, so now the question is, we're back to the question, how do we find this part? That is, how do we make explicit this cross? Well, we're not going to make explicit that cross. We're going to make explicit that cross once we put a cut on that expression. This is largely good enough as far as the construction of the amplitude is concerned. We just have all the cuts of the amplitude in a nice form that is something that's already organized in terms of graphs, tree level, in terms of trees. And if we don't have it organized in terms of trees, we have it organized close to trees, a lot closer than what KLT would give us. All right, so how do we do this? Well, we do this by making use of the expectation that these Yang-Mills amplitudes that we stuck in, while we don't have them in the right form, they should have some color kinematic satisfying expression. And that assumption happens to be good enough. So the way this works is that, that just tells us that on the one hand, M is that, but it is also of the form, the same sum, the same integral, and BCJ, and BCJ tilde, and the same denominators. And not only that, but these n's that enter in the naive double copy are actually related to the NBCJ. By a generalized gauge transformation. That is, it's a transformation such that when you stick it into the expression for the Yang-Mills amplitude, it doesn't change it. That is, that is sum over graphs, delta j, times Cj divided by the propagators is in fact zero. So at least at tree level. All right. So this data is enough to actually construct the cuts of that expression, which, for lack of a better name, I'm going to call extra. And that would be okay. So how do we do this? Also, let's have a look at the cut. And I'm going to take a fairly general cut, which is made out of a whole bunch of blobs with various number of external legs. So I'm going to take Q of them. And the graphs that appear in each of them, I'm going to label them by I1 up to IQ. The range of I1 to IQ depends, of course, on the number of external legs of each tree-level factor in the cut. For a 4-point is 3, for a 5 is 15, and so on. So this would be okay. And the corresponding numerators, which are really just restrictions of these guys, I'm going to call them NI1IQ. These are the numerators on the cut. And these guys are related to the corresponding NBCJ. That is the restriction of these guys to the same cut by a generalized gauge transformation. The cut is, on the one hand, sum I1 IQ and BCJ, the other BCJ. So these D's are the product of all propagators, of all denominators of propagators in each of these graphs. So that's one expression of the cut. And another one is the same, just without the BCJ indices. Plus the cut of extra. Now, imagine taking this and plugging it in there and using the properties of delta. The product NBCJ NBCJ tilde is the same as that, so it just cancels. The cross terms NBCJ times delta are zero because NBCJ have the same properties as C. And this sum over delta times C is zero. Therefore, the sum over delta times NBCJ is zero. So what we're actually left with is this. I can write it as C, meaning that, plus E, or rather, plus sum delta I1 IQ, delta tilde I1 IQ, D I1. Q plus E. So there it is. The cuts of E are given by just that. Okay. We're almost home free. All we have to do is find nice expressions for this for these deltas. And this is where last questions becomes important. All right, how do we find nice expressions for these deltas? Well, we find them by looking at this. So we could act on this thing with this operator jk, which I defined some time ago. So jk, what it did was it basically took three n's that were corresponding to c's related by Jacobi relations and summed them up with the relevant signs. So we can act with this j corresponding to some propagator lambda in some graph A that appears in this cut. And if we did that, we find this j corresponding to n's, some graph A, and propagate the lambda. So let's say that this enters in blob V. So this is just up to signs, just n I1, iv minus 1. Here there is A, and then B plus 1 IQ, plus up to a sign, the same B, with graph B, which is related by Jacobi transformation, plus graph C. Oops, B plus 1. Right. So let's call this thing J I1 I V A propagator lambda V minus 1 I V plus 1 I Q. So we can act with this operator on this relation. The action kills NBCJ because that is supposed to obey the Jacobi identity. So we find a relation between some linear combinations of these deltas and these Jacobiators, so to call them, which would be zero if n obeyed Jacobi identity. So doing this leads us to some relation, this j is j of delta. So now all one has to do is try to invert that relation, find delta as a function of these Jacobiators, take that answer, stick it in here, shake the result, and we find, and therefore we have the cuts of this expression in a form that's closely resembling this, that is bilinear in these j's, because each delta, this relation is linear, delta is linear in j, so these cuts will also be bilinear in j and j tilde. So there it is, at least at the level of words. Any questions?
Is it also really a function of the Jacobiators, or is it a function of the cubic graphs?
Excellent point. So this, so why can't we do this in general? Exactly for the reason you just mentioned. This relation is a function of J, but it depends on the precise topology of the cut. So there's one relation for, say, a pair of four-point blobs. There's another one for 1 5-point blob. There's another one for 3 4-point blobs, and so on and so forth. Maybe here I should say pseudo-invert, because really this map is not invertible for exactly the same reason you were mentioning earlier. These j's are, well, just like the three c's, the sum of three c's is not independent. The sum of these, well, these j's are not independent. They're not independent for many reasons. One of them has to do with the way they are defined. There is an overcount by factor, there is a trivial overcount by factor of three. Another reason they are independent is somewhat analogous to the way the Kleist-Coiffe relation becomes somewhat trivial if you express the color order the amplitude in terms of this overcomplete basis of numerators. And then there is yet another reason why they are not independent, the reason this is not invertible, and that has to do with bad luck. Or maybe good luck, I don't know. These J's, apart from the relations that I just mentioned, these J's also obey relations quite analogous to the BCJ relations. Yeah, something like J divided by some D's with some constant coefficients. Here's your. And in fact, this relation, to make this inverse, you need to either solve this or pick a small enough subset to be able to solve and large enough not to leave anything undetermined. This really will give us delta of J in some basis. And the basis, if you wish unwind the basis, you need to use the solution of this, and that's a little bit unpleasant. But in principle, it can be done. We've done it in a number of cases. In all cases that we wished, but in all cases that we wished, we had good enough expressions to use. So in the remaining 12 minutes or so, let me show you an example of exactly how this thing works, because this was 40 minutes of talk and not a single example. So the simplest example which touches these issues only marginally, but it gives the type of expressions that we might expect, involves cuts with 2 4-point blobs. Okay. So before getting there. So the punchline of this little discussion here is that this E ultimately has the form B, a sum over I and J, which belong to some basis, of Bij, which is a matrix which depends on momentum invariance. And then Ji, Bij tilde, and now you perhaps guess the reason for the tilde on JJ's name. All right, so ultimately the goal is to find B and find it in a nice form, perhaps unwind that basis, use an overcomplete basis to beautify that expression. So the example here that I want to discuss is the simplest cut there is. Now, if you look at this examples, you will quickly find that if a 4.3 level amplitude always obeys color kinematics, a product of 4-point amplitudes, no, it doesn't. And it can do it in peculiar ways. So anyhow, the numerators that would appear in this story are labeled by Ni1, Ni2. I12 run from 1 to 3, which are the ST and U channel in each factor. We have these J's that I defined there. So we can pick any of the three graphs here and the one propagator in that graph. So this is called SU, and propagator 1 is a single one. And I2, this is sum of I1, I2, I1 from 1 to 3, J, I1, U1, sum I2, so these are the two J's. So this is simple enough not to be necessary to pick any particular parametrization of this delta, but it is nonetheless useful to pick a parametrization of delta that looks like that. The delta I1, I2 is dI1, 1, alpha I2, plus dI1, dA2, alpha I1. So what is the meaning of this? The meaning is that delta is proportional to some inverse propagator either in blob 1 or blob 2. Why is that a useful parametrization, and why does this not impose additional constraints? It's because we already expected this E to start contributing only at next to maximal cuts, that is two collapsed propagators. And if delta is of that form, then this does exactly that. All right, so using this and that, it's not hard to see using this that this J is the same as dI2, sum I1 of I1, and this one is the other one, dI1 1.
Could you draw a picture to illustrate what you mean by the 4x4?
What I mean by 4x4. So the cut in question involves 9 graphs, and they are this. This is a product with the same. So this would be, so this would be I1 equals 1, I1 equals 2, I1 equals 3. This is I2 equals 1, I2 equals 2, I2 equals 3. So N1, 1 is the numerator of the cut that looks like this. And then it's connected by cut propagators to this other one somewhere. Okay. So all right, so our E is minus the sum of, so we have to take this, multiply it with itself, with tildes, and kill some terms, and see what's left. I1, I2, I1, I2, DI1, 1, DI2, 2. I1, I2. So if we look at the product, so two of these terms of the first type come within DI1 square, cancels a DI1 here, so it ends up with sum of DI1s over 3, so that's S plus T plus U, that's 0. Two of these people, the same, just I2 this time. So the only thing that survives in the product are the cross terms. So we are left with minus sum I1, I2, DI1, 1, DI2, 2, alpha I2, 2, alpha I1, 1. All right, so this is just minus sum I1, alpha I1, 1, sum I2, alpha I2, 2, plus... So now we can recognize these guys if we look back here. So those sums over alphas, you can just extract them from the two. This is just minus the I11, the I22, J, U1, I2, J tilde, I1, U1. Plus J replaced with J tilde. So that's the expression of the cut. Now, the indices here are a little bit fake because, in fact, here this ratio J over D is independent of I2. So one can make it very symmetric by saying sum over all I1 and I2 and divide by 3 times 3. So that's what it is. It's nice, it's useful, and it has the structure that we were hoping. It's bilinear in J's. It has its graph organized. It's exactly the structure of the graphs that we put in the beginning. And to compute it, all we need is the starting point, just a Yang-Mills amplitude. We don't need to care about KLT. We don't need to care about tree-level amplitudes, at least not beyond the ones needed to actually compute the Yang-Mills amplitude. And yeah, that's what it is. So that's the simplest example. There are more, and the ones that we could beautify in this sense always look nice. So if you have a cut with a five-point blob, the corresponding E looks like minus I from 1 to 15, the I1, the I2. So these are the two propagators in one five-point graph. And then take I propagator 1, so Jacobiator for graph I on propagator 1, I propagator 2, plus switch the tildes. So it's morally the same structures here. We can also do any number of fours, and there is some structure which I'm not going to tell you about it because I ran out of time. But it does have a structure. It's always bilinear in J and J tilde. It's always graph organized in exactly the same sense. You only get the graphs that you expect from the trees that you have. So and the same goes for 5 times 4. Oops, this is n already. 4 to the n. So this is where the beautiful formula in this sense stop. Beyond this, we have usable formula. But they are more of this type. They are in the basis. This one starts with, the beautiful version has 15 terms. The less beautiful version has only 5. So the basis of J has 5 terms. And then the coefficients are more rational than just products of propagators. They have stuff in the numerator. So that's the structure of this thesis. They're more rational than just product of propagators. So that's almost the end of my talk. Can I take 5 more minutes?
Sure.
There were no questions, so maybe I should have.
Aren't you going to show us, or maybe that's what you're going to do in the 5 minutes?
No, I was not planning to show
you. You're not going to tell us which ones violate BCJ and how about these
here?
Contact terms?
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe I should do that. The example. Okay. I was planning to tell you about...
That's why you drew those in the first place.
Yes, but I was also planning to speak a little bit faster. I was planning to tell you about pipe dream, but maybe I'll leave the pipe dream for later.
We're planning of time. Other people have plenty of time.
Well, I might have taken off my organizer hat.
He's an organizer.
We want her. He has a meat place, sir. Why don't you tell us about
the All right, I will. I will tell you about the example.
You're trying to escape responsibility.
All right. So the example, which is in fact an application of this formula, deals with this graph. It deals with this particular cut. So if this cut is non-zero in the sense that if it is, if E corresponding to this cut is non-zero, it means that we should have a contact term which looks exactly like this picture, except the shaded dots are not shaded anymore. They're just dots. So there are 9 graphs contributing to this, which you get by taking each of these these blobs and expand and blowing them up in 3 different ways like that. And I'm going to draw the ones that correspond to N11, N21, and N31. So this is I1, and this is I2. So this is one, which corresponds to blowing this one this way. So this is the propagator that's collapsed, 1, 2. And then there is this one, because the index 2 is always, the second index is always the same, 1 and 2 always sit here. And then this guy always, 3 is always there, this is 4. 3 and 4, and then one, two, and then 3 and 4. So this is the one that stays put, and the propagators that are hidden in this blob are this one, and this one. All right, so if you inspect this, these 3 pictures, and try to compare them with these, you will notice that the first one corresponds to graph C, which is this one, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And this one is a copy of G, and this one is another copy of G. Right, so this one is exactly the copy of G. The last one is exactly this copy of G, and that one is this G flipped upside. And just in the interest of not taking too much time, I need to check, of course. I assume you don't want to see me doing graph isomorphism on the fly, so I'm going to revert to sticking to the script. So this one is just S squared. This one, if you do the mapping happens to be S, T plus twice P2.P6 plus twice P2P3.P6. And the last one is S times U minus twice P3.P6.
Can you tell which one is 6?
I should say which one is 6, and 6 is this guy. So the reason... the corresponding J, which is... So J1, U1, is just the sum of all these people. This guy cancels. This, this, and that cancels. So we are left with S twice P2.P6. Now, P2.P6 is not something totally mad. It's a propagator that actually exists, while the dot product that corresponds to something is just this one. So this is 6. All right. So if you do the same for the other one, that is, you keep, say, this one fixed, and then you blow this guy up into three possible ways, namely here and there, you will find that J U1 1 is S times twice P3.P7. And 7 is this guy. So this is also something that exists as the red propagator. So putting the two together, the corresponding E is just, so this times that divided by these two guys. And this is just minus 2s squared. So the 2 comes from the symmetrization tilde with no tilde. And the S square comes because there are two of them. The propagators cancel. It's these that cancel. And that's it. So this E is non-zero. So we do expect, this implies that there is a contact term that whose graph looks exactly like this. And if you look in our paper, the second paper on the two loop, on three loop n equals 4, n equals 8 supergravity amplitude, and dig inside the expressions that we have in there, you will find this particular contact term. The reason you have to dig in there is because we didn't expand it in terms of contact terms. We left it. We left everything in terms of cubic graphs. But once you isolate the naive double copy, then that guy is there. There are a few more contact terms that you can get by inspecting this and looking at the next to maximal cuts. So you would need this expression as well as the one for the 5-point blob that used to be there. But with those two expressions in hand, you can do the calculation, maybe not on a napkin, on two napkins. So with that example...
Sorry, you need 5-point contact terms too?
Yes, there is one. There is one? I think there is one. Yeah, there is one. So on that note, let me stop here and tell you that this was extremely useful for constructing the 5-loop n equals 8 amplitude, and without it, we probably would not have done it.
We should be working on.
Yeah, that's the better way to say it. thank you.
More questions already?
Mm-hmm. What do the string analog of this generalized double copy? The generalized KLT or?
Something I guess people have been working on one loop string analogs, so KLT should be related to that.
Well, maybe, except the problem is that the reason I'm having a hard time giving it an interpretation is that in string theory, you know, everything comes in a package. So it's hard to separate from the outset contact terms from non-contact terms. That separation comes only when you go to some field theory limit. So I don't know.
So 4 and 5 loops, what's the equivalent number of those 9 diagrams?
So at 5 loops, the corresponding number is 410. At 4 loops, I forget, maybe...
Sorry, 410 counts what?
So 410 counts all the cubic graphs. I can also tell you the number of contacts.
About 6,000.
No, I mean the contacts, not the non-zero contacts.
Oh, 76,000.
I had to write them down because I was sure somebody would be asking. So there are 6,699 N-square contacts, 17,000 and change and 3 contacts, 21,000 and change, actually it's more like 22,000, and 18,005 and 9,000 and some and 6 contacts. The corresponding numbers at 4 loops are 600 and some and 2 contacts, a little under 1,000 and 3 and a little under 1,000 and 4 contacts.
Luckily, most of these are zero.
But still, are you going to make that movie with Jodie Foster, the sequel called Final Contact?
Final Contact was non-trivial.
Any more questions?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So you have said that those J's, they depend on each other. Through some BCJ-like identities.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Is this exactly a BCJ identity? Does it look the same?
What I meant is that the structure is somewhat similar. So the BCJ amplitude relations are bilinear in momenta, amplitude sum equals zero. So this one is, if you wish, 1/ momentum invariant J sum equals zero.
Can you give an example?
No, not offhand. I can point you to a paper of Tai and Zhang from 2010, where such relations were written out explicitly for the 5-point amplitude. The reason I can't give you an example off the top of my head is because I need to first draw the graphs and so which J and which denominators come with.
But you can easily draw it schematically. I mean.
It's like Cij, J over Cij. So Cij is a matrix with coefficients 0 and 1, and these J and so J's are these J's, and these are denominators, propagators. The corresponding BCJ amplitude relations look like Dij, Di, J. So in this sense, they are somewhat similar.
All right, let's say right again.